Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Grunewald, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, we are thrilled to have Kevin Seif join us. Kevin served as a Navy SEAL and Marine, is the founder of the Vet Collective, and host of the Harder, Not Smarter podcast. He is dedicated to helping veterans transition to entrepreneurship through his weekly Monday morning Veterpreneur newsletter. In today's episode, listeners will discover, first, military transition to business leadership. Kevin shares his personal transition from military service to entrepreneurship, highlighting how military training equips veterans with the skills necessary to effectively run a business. Second, his borrow, build, buy method. Kevin elaborates on strategic approaches to entrepreneurship through the borrow, build, buy method, detailing considerations for entering various markets. Finally, franchise expertise. Kevin shares his knowledge on franchise opportunities, providing listeners with insights on selecting, investing in, and managing franchises effectively. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Grunewald, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Kevin Seif, just down the road in San Diego. Encinitas, even more specific. Great part of the world. And Kevin's the founder of the Vet Collective. He's the host of the Harder, Not Smarter podcast, and also a writer every Monday, the Monday Morning Veterpreneur newsletter. So producing a lot of cool content. And I'm excited to dive into your story today, Kevin. Perhaps you can share a little bit about how you came to be doing all this work with our listeners.
I appreciate it, Dane. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, so my story, I guess, going back far enough, I served as both a Marine and a Navy SEAL for a little over a decade. It was about 12 years before getting out in 2020. Did a couple deployments, did some overseas work, had a great time with it, really enjoyed everything I got to do in the military, but I just saw that there was a lot of shifting and changing. You know, when I joined the military in 2008, it was a very different atmosphere. You know, we had Iraq and Afghanistan going on. There's a whole bunch of dynamic combat going on around the world. And so it was a very specific mission and purpose that I was going out to do. Mm-hmm. By the time I got out in 2020, you know, Iraq had already shut down. Afghanistan had talks of being shut down. The deployments we were doing were more presence opportunity. And so I saw it as my opportunity to find something different and experience what else there is in the world other than the military, because my entire adult life up to that point had been in the military. So I got out February 29th of 2020. I remember that very specifically, aside from being leap day. It was pretty much exactly 2 weeks before COVID shut everything down. Like here in San Diego, the beaches were closed. I live right by I-5, the major artery highway going up and down Southern California. And we'd walk the dogs across the freeway and it was empty. Like you'd see one car every couple minutes. It was just bizarre. And so I'm trying to figure out my transition from military to civilian life, which is already very complicated and stressful, and there's a lot of unknown associated with it. And I just threw in this massive, or I didn't throw it in, but life threw in this massive curveball of COVID. The first job I had, my job offer was actually rescinded because they didn't know what was going to be going on. Like, we don't want to bring you on just to have to lay you off. And so it was a very interesting time to get out of the military and figure out a bunch of these things. I'm actually super fortunate that COVID was a great career kickoff for me. It opened up a lot of our opportunities that may not have been there before. Like since leaving the military, I have not been into an office for a single day of work. I worked remotely the entire time. I started off as a recruiter in the tech and life science space and realized pretty quickly, took me about 10 months, that I can do this job myself. I don't need to actually work for somebody else. You know, I don't need to give up a huge percentage of my commission to somebody else where I was already doing essentially full cycle recruiting and bringing on clients, placing candidates, negotiating contracts on placement deals. And so when I actually got COVID over New Year's of 2020 going into 2021, I had this junction point in my life. I can either go back to work on, you know, beginning of January, doing the same job with my commission resetting for a new year. I'd made all my placements going into that year, so I didn't have anything in the pipeline. Or I can leave, figure out how to start my own company, make the full commission, so make four times as much. So I can either work the same amount, get four times as much, or work a quarter of the amount and make the same amount of money. So I'm sitting around with COVID not being able to do much. I decided to give entrepreneurship a try. And I really had no aspirations at that point to be an entrepreneur. I didn't leave the military being like, I'm going to start a business. It was more a opportunistic situation that I decided to take advantage of while my life responsibilities were pretty low. It's just me and my wife. We didn't have any kids at the time. The house, we had enough money for a good amount of runway with the house. The cars were paid off. I was like, let's give it a try and see how it goes. And really, that was my foray into entrepreneurship. And since then, I've started the Vet Collective, which is a community around coaching, educating, and supporting veterans getting into entrepreneurship, whether that's we call it the borrow, build, and buy path. So borrowing is the franchise model where you're borrowing someone else's business model and recreating that exact business in a different location. Mm-hmm. The build model is the typical entrepreneurship path of coming up with an idea and starting a business. And then the hot topic lately has been the buy side or ETA, entrepreneurship through acquisition. Hmm. With the baby boomers all coming up to retirement age, I think they own 40% of the small businesses in the U.S. And so a lot of their businesses are coming up for sale because they don't have succession plans either with a child coming in or someone to looking to buy the business.
Yeah.
So there's a huge opportunity for people of my generation to come in, step into an existing business that's revenue producing, has clients, has a good product market fit, has all the wickets. Someone just wants to step away from it and have a responsible individual come in as the owner.
Yeah.
So that's really what we're trying to promote is one of those three paths for veterans to get into, to be owners of their career, as opposed to just being a W-2 employee, which so many are pushed into because that's what they think they have to do.
That's super neat. And you're absolutely right on the on this boomer exit. I was sitting on the plane the other day next to a gentleman who's currently selling his business to a 33-year-old employee, someone who's worked in this fabrication facility for probably 5 or 10 years, knows mm-hmm. what they do. And he's just like, hey, it's my turn. I'm ready to put my hand up and run it.
Yeah. I just wrote an article, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about a business. It's a drywall company. So nothing sexy. This isn't, you know, uh-huh. coming up with the next Facebook or some tech business or anything like that. It's a drywalling company in Northern Colorado. They're not in Denver. They're not in Wyoming. They're just up there in Northern Colorado. And one of the guys I partner with, the business called Clearly Acquired, they do business brokerage stuff. So I use them as the conduit to help veterans get into buying a business. I was talking with the owner, Samson Jagoras. He was saying that they were in discussion with this guy about buying it because they're bringing in $15 million a year in revenue in a drywall business. Mm-hmm. That is, again, isn't in Denver, isn't in another state. And they asked, you know, why not expand into the bigger metropolitan areas or become interstate? He's like, I'm writing myself a check every year for $3 million. And I'm looking to
retire. Why do I need to do it?
Why do I want to put on that extra workload for myself, that extra responsibility, that extra stress, when I'm making $3 million a year? And that's dividends. That's not me paying myself or anything like that. So that's a different tax bracket. I think that's capital gains, which is like 15%. So he's barely paying any taxes on it too. Plus he has all the write-offs from the business. Like, why do I need to add that? So if you get someone to come in that's in their 30s, that's aggressive and eager, and they have that longevity, then they can start expanding that. Now you're taking a $15 million business and can turn it into a $50 million business pretty mm-hmm. pretty quickly. And all the pieces are there. It just takes someone with the energy and the desire to do that. And these businesses are all over the country.
Yeah. And that's what I loved just pre-show. You and I were talking, Kevin, about entrepreneurship and how a lot of people are growing up afraid of it, thinking they need to have the next Facebook, as you said, or a whole bunch of money or investors. But you're right. It's so often it's about getting into a business that already operates well, and or copying a business that already operates well, and just mm-hmm. putting your own, you know, hard work and effort into how your team delivers for your customers.
Absolutely. There's a simplicity around business that I think people either miss or undervalue. As you kind of said, you know, a lot of people think business is, I need to come up with a unique idea, or I need to come up with a new process that improves on that business model, you know, that makes it faster, better, cheaper, more efficient, whatever it is. And it's really not the case. So many other businesses, you can literally copy and paste almost like a franchise, but you're just doing it with your own business. Like if you're getting to a roofing company or a tree maintenance company or a landscaping company, like you're not cutting trees better than the other guy. You're not roofing a house better than the other guy with like unique materials that you have a patent on. That's not necessary. To be a successful business, just do the fundamentals, do the basics well. Run your team, hire good people, treat them well, manage your resources and your schedule, bring on new clients, market yourself well. All these things are ubiquitous across entrepreneurship and across business. And a lot of those skills are things that we learned in the military. From very junior ranks and young ages, military people are given responsibility and authority over others that it's pretty much unheard of in the civilian sector. Like in the Marine Corps, I love using this example of an infantry platoon. You can be like a 20-year-old Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps making life or death decisions for your fire team in a combat zone that is dictating whether you guys die, the enemy dies. You're using thousands or millions of dollars in ordnance and equipment. You can be calling in multi-million dollar aircraft. You're literally a 20-year-old doing these decisions. Like if you can do that, you can step into a business and, you know, make some decisions on who's going to be showing up to work that day, what project or what tasks need to happen that day, what resources need to come in and be on the job site or something if you're in the construction to get those tasks done. Did payroll get run? Are you doing periodic reviews with your employees so they have expectations? Are your taxes being paid? You know, these are things that anybody in the military can figure out. You just need to have a game plan and a framework of how to implement these things. And that's what we're trying to do at the Vet Collective, is educate you on how a business is run so that you can take that and run it with it yourself.
That's neat. And you're absolutely right. We had a guest on, John McLaughlin, who'd written a book. I think he'd been a paratrooper. He'd written a book about how in the military that used the word authority is very clear. But he also shared that people move through a lot of different job roles. A lot of people are moving every couple of years, joining a new team, have a new responsibility. I think there's skills that a lot of civilian business owners probably overlook or underestimate because they don't show up on a resume in the same way. So there's a lot of talents there in that veteran community that are underemployed, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. It is difficult to translate your experiences and your skills from the military into something corporate America can understand, you know. I've done a couple posts about this on LinkedIn. The one that got the most traction was fast roping out of a helicopter. So if you're not familiar with fast roping, it's like, if you've ever seen the movie Black Hawk Down, the guys come in on the helicopter, hover over the roof of the house or over the streets, and they drop a big, you know, like 3-inch diameter rope down the helicopter, and they slide down it like a fireman going down a pole. Seems simple enough, but there's a huge amount of coordination and training that goes into it. Like you need to have a Hearst-Cast master that is trained on making sure that the ropes are connected properly. The pilots need to be trained, how to hold that hover and hold the position and then mark it. You need to learn how to slide down it. You need to learn how to work with the air assets as the ground crew. You know, you don't own or operate that helicopter, but you need to be familiar with how they operate so that you don't do anything dangerous. You don't put them in a risky position. They don't get you hurt. You need to have a risk tolerance associated with it. You need to know how to work with your team and coordinate with other assets. Like there's so many things that you can take from something that looks sexy, but doesn't seem like it correlates to the job market.
Yeah.
And break down each of the little things that become associated with it and tie them into in the job world. So, you know, you have cross-functional communication skills. You have training skills, you have planning skills, you have communication skills. It shows that you can put in the work to learn something new. Like no one goes into the military knowing how to fast rope.
No.
And so there's so many things that you can distill down into this basic fundamentals and tell them to somebody that they can understand how they can find value. That it's really your job as the veteran is to help people understand the value they bring instead of expecting them to just see value in you because you're a veteran.
I like that soundbite, to help people understand the value you bring. So is that what a lot of your content will help to do? So with your community members, they're starting to know how to transform their stories and experiences into, you know, relevant credentials or conversation pieces when they're starting a new business or taking a new role on.
There's a lot of similarities between trying to find a new job and starting a business as an entrepreneur. Like either way, you're talking to people, whether you're trying to get investors, raise funds through institutional loans, apply for a job, interview for a job, like all these things are talking about the value you're bringing and building trust with them. You know, no one's going to hire you if they don't trust you. No one's going to lend you money if they don't trust you. So it comes down to showing that you as an individual are trustworthy, you're hardworking, you're coming in with a plan, and you have a vision for the future, whether you're applying for a job or trying to start a business, they both carry over. So that's really what my content is around, is learning to communicate for yourself, market yourself, promote yourself, because that's really how you become successful after you leave the military. Because it's not something they teach you in the military. It's actually kind of shunned. You know, you don't brag about what you've accomplished. You don't talk about your awards. You're a quiet professional. Your ribbon rack and your personnel jacket, the record of what you've done, kind of speaks for you. And you know, everyone speaks the same language, so they know where you've been coming from and kind of can piece together. So you don't need to brag about it.
Yeah,
but that doesn't exist on the corporate side. You know, you don't have a stack of ribbons on your shirt that you go into the office in that shows that you've been around for a little bit, you had a lot of experience. They don't have all your fit reps from all your fitness reports from all your previous commands that they can look through and kind of see how you performed relative to other people. Like when you show up to an interview, they know nothing about you other than what you've already given them. Whether that's, you know, your resume, your LinkedIn profile, a cover sheet, any correspondence you had, but it's all about what you've created and given to them.
Yeah, that's neat. It's funny when you talked about the fit reps and the ribbon rack, it does make you wonder why the corporate world hasn't done a better job of tracking some of that. I think maybe in part it's because a lot of corporations hold on to all of that data. They don't give it to you as the employee to take with you. Where at least in the military, you're all part of one branch and therefore that data is more free flowing.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense for a business to give you things that make it easier for you to leave. They'll want you to stay. And so why would they make it simpler, more convenient for you to carry these things over? And you know, they don't want to communicate with the other businesses that you might be going to other than them calling over and being like, this person worked for you. Did they leave on good terms? That's about the extent of the communication between them.
Yeah, definitely. I'll try not to go down on a rabbit hole on that topic, but I do have one more question for you there, Kevin, which is, are there particular teams or leaders in the military that get recognized because you're tracking that data and the fitness reports, et cetera, for, hey, people that come up under this group or individual leader tend to perform better throughout their career? Are there any, intentional processes there where you know that it's almost like an accelerator of talent in the military coming through a group or a team?
I don't know about an accelerator of talent, but you can see, especially ones where you go to that unit and come back. So like if my role in the Marine Corps was communications, we worked with, you know, computers, switching systems, satellites, radios, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so one of the high speed units you can go to is JSOC. So the Joint Special Operations Command. Those are like SEAL Team 6, Delta. So as a communicator, you can actually go to the JSOC comm unit, do a tour or two over there and come back. And so if you're with a unit and you see that this guy just came from the JSOC comm team, mm-hmm. you can be pretty confident that A, they're a squared away individual. B, they're knowledgeable. C, they're motivated. They take their own career into their hands. You know, it takes effort to apply for a unit like that. You have to go through the vetting process. So it's not like you just got orders and showed up there. You have to go through screening. You have to apply and interview and a whole bunch of other stuff. So if you see things like that, like special units, or, you know, if they were a SEAL, if they were a Green Beret, or if they were a Ranger, if they were MARSOC, you know that they put up with a certain amount of misery to see through their vision and their goals so they can see things through.
Interesting. No, that's very helpful. It does make me think in the corporate setting, you kind of know people. I guess in the corporate setting, it tends to be more attached to certain certifications or postgraduate mm-hmm. degrees than did you go and do, you know, some people go and do like a 6 or an 8 week program at Harvard, like a advanced leadership program. So there may be some parallels there.
I think there's some levels in the corporate space, you know, Amazon's infamous for this. You know, people go to Amazon for a few years, that they gut it out so that they can have that as a resume
platform
pattern.
Brand.
Like, yeah. Like I did 3 years at Amazon. I did well. And now I'm ready to move on to this other thing. And I carry over all the skills and the lessons learned from Amazon, to now be a better employee. I just don't want to deal with Amazon anymore. They're just notorious for having a huge churn rate.
Yeah. No, that's a good example. Cool. Well, thanks for humoring me on that one. That was a point of interest. My next question for you, Kevin, was really around ecosystems. So as you're moving through the veteran community, particularly with your borrow, build, buy framework that you're helping veterans to kind of embrace, are you finding that you're connecting veterans with other veteran business owners or other service providers who can help them go, or is it much more open sort of accessible community model that you're plugging them into?
No, it's absolutely about partnering and collaborating with other businesses and business entity or business resources. So we've been partnering with Tom Scarter on the franchise side. He has been brokering franchise deals for several years, like over a decade, I believe. He's run a couple franchises himself, so he understands the space. He had one successful one that flopped. And he works actually with VetFran, which is an organization that actually screens the franchises to make sure that they're a good deal. Just like any other business out there, not all franchises are created equal. Some are great businesses to work with. Some have terrible support for the franchisees. It's not a good business model. They don't have a good product, whatever it might be. So VetFran actually works with to make sure that the veterans are stepping into good businesses that have the highest likelihood of success. They oftentimes get discounts, either a discounted franchise fee or upfront, you know, they'll get it financed for you. So he's a great individual to help if you want to go the franchise route. We work with Owners in Honor on the entrepreneurship and ETA side to help with bridge financing and entrepreneurship education. And we also partner with Clearly Acquired as a brokerage. They're looking to also create their platform to essentially be a MLS of job listings. Right now, or not job listings, business listings. right now there is no central location. Like if you wanted to buy a house, you can just go on MLS and see every house that's listed in the United States. And you got all the details, the price, the comps, everything. There isn't anything like that for businesses for sale. And so they're trying to work with and attract brokers from across the country to bring their deals on there. They're trying to attract sellers that will list their stuff on there. And obviously they're trying to attract buyers who want to go through the process of finding the businesses, communicating with them, getting financing, and then ultimately stepping into the leadership role.
That's very cool. So as, let's say, a veteran comes into your community off one of the podcasts or off your Monday Morning Vetrepreneur newsletter, and they're like, right, I definitely want to go down the buy pathway. So will you also attach a coach or work with them to say, here's who you need to talk to at Clearly Acquired, and we're now going to start building your playbook for how you find the right business for you?
Yeah, we have our community platform where you can interact with a whole slew of other veterans that are interested in entrepreneurship, regardless of which track you're trying to go down. Yeah. And then on the Clearly Acquired platform, they have a initial, I think it's like a 50 module course going from soup to nuts on, you know, what the process actually looks like, how to start screening through these businesses, how to have conversations, how to get in touch with them, and actually come to the table like an intelligent, knowledgeable individual, as opposed to just being someone that saw a couple Cody Sanchez Instagram videos. You're like, I'm going to buy a business because she said you can do 100% owner financing. You're like, that's just what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Most deals, that's not going to fly. And you need to actually have knowledge about the space. You need to be coming with a team. Do you have a lawyer? Do you have financing in place? Do you have bankers you're working with? Do you have a CPA? Have you done any of this stuff before? Do you know how to read financial statements from the business? Do you actually know what you're looking at when, let's say, the business has you sign an NDA and sends you over their finances?
Yeah.
Are you going to know what to look for? Are you going to know what a good deal is versus a bad deal? Are you going to know, have they been padding it because they're getting ready to sell versus have they been writing off a bunch of expenses earlier because they don't want to be paying taxes? When you're running your business, you write things and account for them certain ways so that you have the most write-offs. When you're looking to sell, you want to be showing the most profit. You're not doing anything illegal or immoral. It's just how you manage things. And so understanding what you're looking at different phases of the business is super important. So having a platform like that or a course like that where you can look through and learn before ever having your first conversation with a business owner or the other side's lawyer, it's so much better and smoother when you have some foundational knowledge you're stepping to the plate with.
Yeah, you bet. And you mentioned their teams. Like, obviously, it's the title of our podcast on the future of teamwork. I'm a huge believer in entrepreneurship being a team sport. Mm-hmm. Do you help connect veterans in your community with other veterans that they might want to go into business with, or do they tend to kind of find their own people through that community? How does that play out?
Yeah, we've had a couple collaborations actually between members of the community. There's an apparel company that's working with a coffee company to create a apparel specific coffee roast that they're going to sell and have the proceeds go towards a veteran nonprofit. So those are more collaborations and business partners, but absolutely we have a find a founder channel within our platform. So we host our community on Circle, and one of the channels is find a founder or co-founder, which is super important. Going into a business, going into a venture with the right business partner is such an important decision. You cannot be taken lightly. I mean, it's pretty much legally akin to getting married with that person. Now you have intermixed finances and rights between the people. And so if you don't communicate well with them, if you don't interact with them well, if you don't have good emotional connection with them, because you're going to be spending a lot of time, you know, how do they act when they get stressed? How do they act when they get happy? How do they act when a bunch of money starts coming in? Are they going to all of a sudden pull a Zuckerberg and write you off the stocks and stuff like that? Like, you need to be finding your partners with sound judgment, and you shouldn't be doing it haphazardly. Having the veteran background gives some level of credibility and a baseline understanding of who they are. You know, most veterans will trust another veteran before just an average person that they see on the street. But at the same time, there's millions and millions of veterans. Should you trust every one of them? Probably not. You know, we're not saints or anything that give us a higher moral code.
Yeah.
We just would like to think that we're going to not screw each other over in a situation.
There's some shared experience, common language and framework, mm-hmm. I would imagine. And like you say, a business partnership can be like a marriage. I actually think it's harder than a marriage, because mm-hmm. at least in a marriage, you should be kind of going home every night to the same house and sharing a bunch of stuff, where business partners can have very, very different lifestyle aspirations and family influences. So that makes it all the more nuanced.
Mm-hmm. And then with building a team, you know, business partner is one piece of it, but it's definitely not a necessary piece. You don't need to be going into business with a business partner.
Yeah.
But you do need to have, we call it the ABCs of going into business. You need to have an accountant, a banker, and counsel.
Oh, so I like that.
Having an accountant, so a CPA, someone that knows how to manage things. The biggest advantage you have as being a business owner is the tax write-offs and the tax sheltering of it. You know, you can do expenses, you can offset losses from one area to gains in another.
Yeah.
A banker, you know, that's how you're going to get the lending, the financing. Having a good credit score is great, but really if you're going with an SBA loan, they care more about the business plan or the business that you're going into, more so than how well you're paying off your own credit cards. And then counsel, you know, going into it with a business related attorney. Don't be finding a family law attorney. Don't be finding someone that's going after criminals. You want to know someone that understands contracts and employment law and closing on acquisitions. Those may be three different lawyers too, depending on how specific you're getting. But having good legal counsel going into these endeavors is huge, and making sure that you're in line with them, that they're not. I was talking with Samson about another story where this one side went in with someone that spent most of their time as family law, particularly with divorces. And so everything was like a throwdown competition of, we're not giving into any of these requests, like in a divorce, you're not going to get the house, we're keeping the house. And it almost killed the deal because there was very little negotiation. It was take it or leave it type mentality. So they had to smooth things over constantly.
Oh yeah. I've found that myself, Kevin, that when you're doing the legal negotiations around buying and selling businesses, the faster you can get all parties around the table having common sense discussions, the better chance you have of not only getting the deal closed, but actually doing the handoff well. Because once you buy that business, it's not like they just give you the keys and walk away. There's some degree of integration. You might mm-hmm. be inheriting some of their vendor relationships, some of their employee relationships.
Or even keeping them on board for a little while as a consultant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that becomes more and more critical, mm-hmm. Particularly if you haven't done a lot of work in that particular domain before. No, that's really neat. So as you look at the landscape right now with those boomer exits, what sort of percentage of the veteran community that are starting business are going down the buy path versus the borrow or the build?
That's a good question. I don't think I have numbers on which one's going where. I think the franchise route is less than the other two.
Yeah.
Just because I think franchising has such a stigma around it of McDonald's, Carl's Jr., Wendy's, when really the vast majority of franchises have nothing to do with the food industry. Honestly, I keep getting told, never owned a franchise, so I can't actually speak specifically to it, but what I keep getting told is that the food-based franchises are just horrible businesses to get into. You hear Shaq has 75 of them. And yeah. I was talking with Tom about it. He's like, honestly, if you're making a ton of money, it's great because you can just dump a ton of losses into those to write off stuff. And so you're basically maintaining your finances here and then making a bunch over here. You can write off a bunch of stuff. But the employees that you're hiring at McDonald's are not the highest caliber. And so you're constantly having to deal with churn and training and just personal issues. Managing them is a nightmare. And then customers, we've all seen people just blow up at the cashier at some fast food place because they're having a shitty day eating shitty food. Sorry from cussing.
No, you're good.
And you're saying that's the type of people that you're going to be interacting with. But really, the vast majority, I think it's like 6 out of 7 franchises have nothing to do with food. So think of any home service, security, roofing, landscaping, painting, drywalling, all of pest control, restoration, if you have any flood or fire damage, all those things have franchise opportunities associated with them.
Yeah.
And now you're just working with people in their homes or you're either trying to help them fix their home or improve their home. People are generally thankful and welcoming to those types of areas. And with the cultural landscape of going where they are, where blue collar workers are aging out, we're not getting a lot of the Gen Z and the Gen A or AI, whatever you want to call them. They don't have much of a desire or aspiration to get into those types of jobs. And so very few spots are saturated with home service businesses.
Yeah.
And so every franchise broker that I've spoken with have said, if you want to get into franchise, get into one of those, you know, think of like ServPro or something like that, carpet cleaning, where there's always business. It doesn't take a ton of work, a ton of equipment. You don't need to have some big overhead office. You know, we have warehouses and equipment. Like you can do a lot of these things from a van that has the equipment in it. And so it keeps the costs, the initial cost down. And you know, you hire a couple of people and start filling these in. They tend to be a little bit more skilled. The pay is much better. And so you have much better employee retention and satisfaction in these areas. And they can very quickly turn into high 6-figure, 7-figure businesses.
Yeah.
And the marketing has already been done for you. And so to get back to your question, though, I think a lot of people misunderstand franchises. And so they avoid them. And they also hear stories about, you know, you need $1 million to buy into a McDonald's franchise. Right. Most of the franchises are probably between $50,000 and $150,000 to buy into.
Yeah.
And so people, I think, are just tending towards either the build model of come up with an idea and start from scratch, or with the massive amount of content that's going on social media around ETAs. I think there's a lot of interest in that. But also people just don't know how to get financing. Like, how do I buy a $5 million business or a $6 million business where the SBA caps out at $5 million? And that's where it pays to have...
good banker.
Good bank, but also a knowledgeable community like the Vet Collective or Clearly Acquired that can talk you through, okay, now that we're beyond the scope of the SBA loan, here's how we bring on other investors and other people that are interested in buying a business like the drywall one where they're bringing in $15 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's neat. And I like what you shared there as well about employee issues and customer issues, because going back to teams, if you're coming out of military, you've got good work ethic, good standards, you've always been good at communicating and planning, then you can beat out your competition just by building a really good team of employees and giving your customers a great experience. Again, you don't need a novel tech ID. Just go and do really good work.
Yeah, just run your business better than your competitor. That's all that really matters. Let your employees do what they are there to do, which is think, innovate, and execute.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. And on the build, like building businesses from scratch is hard because often, you know, you don't have any customers and you don't have any revenue with which to start hiring team members. So you're kind of doing a lot on your own. How do you find you're helping those entrepreneurs to get their start? Is it more sort of community-based sort of peers, buddies, that type of thing? Or are you actually starting to connect people into possible customer channels? Where are the big lifts for you?
The build one is a tough one, and that one really comes down to expectation management. It's like,
yeah,
you know, 10% of businesses make it to year two as a startup, and then 10% of those, so now you're in the 1%, make it past 5 years. And so you need to go into it having longevity. You're probably not going to be profitable for a while, depending on what type of business you're getting into. You know, some have significantly more overhead and burden to them. Like when I started the recruiting agency, I worked from home. I had my computer, I had a cell phone, I had internet access and a LinkedIn account. The only thing I really paid for was the LinkedIn recruiter subscription, which was like $7,500 a year. So my overhead, aside from things I already paid for anyway, was $7,500 a year. And some of those deals were $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. So it's very, very easy to become profitable, but it's one of those where the easier it is to get into that industry, the easier it is for other people to get into that industry. So the market's very saturated. So you have to work really hard on sales and marketing, where if you're getting into like an apparel design, you need to work with the manufacturers. You need to have raw materials. You need to deal with overseas shipping a lot of times, because things are made in Vietnam or China or wherever. You need to deal with warehousing and distribution and packaging. Like all those things just keep adding up fees and fees and fees. And there's ways to shortcut it. Like you can have made to order things, but that takes longer. It cuts into your margin, a whole bunch of other things. So you can start off that way, build a customer base. And so there's ways to layer. But it really depends what type of business you're getting into to see how much runway you're going to need to survive. You know, is it just you paying your own bills, or are you going to have significant bills on the business side? And so having conversations about expectation management, really diving into, is there going to be product market fit? Don't spend a bunch of money on something until you know it's a good idea. It may sound like a brilliant idea to you and the couple people around you that you talk to, but have you started talking to actual customers? Have you started talking about pricing? Have you started talking about what they'd be willing to pay for something, and how many people of it? And are they going to be a repeat customer? Do you need them to keep buying over and over and over again? Or are you looking at acquiring new customers for every single one?
Yeah.
And so these are the types of things that we talk with them about to make sure they're getting down a smart business track with this idea. Have they looked through all these things, or did they just go into it being like, this is a brilliant idea, I'm going to make this and go. And then they're disappointed when nobody wants to buy their widget.
I think that one's a really powerful one. And I know particularly product businesses, but I do see it in services too. You're seeing more and more people using these wait lists where they're like, hey, sign up to be one of the first 10 people to get this product. And then depending on how many signups you get, you can then survey them to your point and say, what would you pay for it? What are you currently using for this right now? So you get to do your market research.
Or even say, you know, here's a pre-order for it. And if you don't hit your margin, how many people, then you just like, hey, sorry.
Can't do it.
And you just refund them. And so it's significantly less risk than saying, all right, I'm going to make a t-shirt company. I'm going to come up with 5 different colors and 3 different sizes and 8 different designs. And every one of them, you're going to have a warehouse, you're going to be storing them in your garage. And now you're stuck at the end with all these shirts that nobody wants. And you're like, well, I guess I'm going to be wearing these shirts for the rest of my life.
That's it. That's neat. Final question for you on these teams is, it's a big community. I think you said you had about 6,500 people now in the Vetrepreneur community.
So on the newsletter, we're around 4,500. The podcast is a little bit harder to gauge because we get listeners versus subscribers is a little different. But the Vet Collective community is around 100 members right now. And we've been growing, you know, a couple percent every month, which is what we're hoping for. Yeah.
Good. So with those communities, are you starting to see any of those first wave entrepreneurs that are starting to come back and say, okay, now I'm in my business, I need help scaling? Is that becoming a talking point?
Not yet. We're still pretty early on. We're inside of a year of the community,
right?
But we've had some, as I said, good success with collaborations. We've seen them growing. We've seen some businesses hit huge milestones, you know, like becoming fulfilled by Amazon approved, you know, getting that,
yeah.
That SIM approval, where they're now shipping their product off to Amazon warehousing. They can get that next day prime type stuff, getting websites built, products revamped, customer growth. And so it's about seeing and sharing those experiences among one another so that you can get inspired and see what's possible out there. Or maybe it gets your own juices flowing of helping you figure out something that you can also get into.
That's super cool. My guess is it's going to be more and more growth and scale oriented over time, because there's a bit of a pay it forward element to what I see in the work you're doing. And I would imagine, particularly with all those boomer exits and with a number of veterans that are right now, in my opinion, underemployed, there's a lot of talent out there that can go and jump into these businesses. So it'll be great to see it go forwards over the next few years and to see all of the cool businesses and sort of team impact that creates.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time right now with the job market. You know, we're seeing 5,000 layoffs, 15,000 layoffs, 20,000 layoffs from some of these big companies. And, you know, some of them are massive Fortune 100 companies. You're seeing Facebook laying off. I think Netflix laid off. Apple, I don't think did. Google has been. And so you're seeing all these massive tech companies that are just cutting employment. You're thinking that you're getting $100,000, $200,000 a year, you're pretty well set, and all of a sudden get the rug pulled out from underneath you.
Yeah.
I think that opens up a lot of people's eyes that they don't want to have to deal with things that are so far out of their control. If they can have significantly more ownership and say in how things happen, you know, it's tough being an entrepreneur. It's not easy. It's not an easier path than being an employee. But it can oftentimes be safer if you do it properly. I think a lot of businesses fail because people just go into it either in a method that's really just creating them a job. You know, you hear the story about you started, you're a baker, so you create a bakery, and now all you're doing is working for yourself inside that bakery. You're not making any profit because you're so exhausted. You're not running the business well. You're not working on the business. You're in it.
Yeah.
I think the average take home of an entrepreneur in the US is $65,000 a year.
Yeah.
And that's because they do that type of thing where, you know, you're just building yourself a job. So I think if people can understand how to get into entrepreneurship or business ownership intelligently by lowering risks and increasing your chance of success, then it becomes a much more tenable option than the stats I was mentioning earlier about, you know, 9 out of 10 businesses fail by this point, 99% of them fail by this point. People are like, why would I take that risk? I've got a family and a mortgage and all these other bills to pay. And so I think there's much better, smarter options out there.
Which is what I love about the work you're doing in the community, Kevin, around the buy pathway and an ETA, because I think that allows people to realize, hey, I've got transferable skills. I can go and find the right partners to get into a meaningful team and business that is going to create, you know, good job security, good job satisfaction, and ability to win and grow over time.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a great conversation. If any of our listeners want to reach out and get involved in the community as partners or as participants, maybe they've got friends and family who are a good fit, how do they best find you and these platforms?
So LinkedIn has all of these things within. We have a LinkedIn page for the Vet Collective, for the Harder Not Smarter podcast, for the Monday Morning Vetrepreneur. I'm very active on there. I post pretty much every day. So if you find and follow me, you'll see regular content associated with entrepreneurship, getting into business, and the like. The newsletter is all about giving business tips, giving case study type stuff on, but not like business school case study. It's more of, hey, this veteran also started this business and created this stuff, or this is something to look for when buying a business. That comes out every Monday. And then the Harder Not Smarter podcast is a little bit more broad sweeping. We typically talk about entrepreneurship, mental health, mindset, and career transition.
Cool.
Fortunately, a lot of things touch on those topics, but it's yeah. more of a positive spin on things. There's plenty of doom and gloom people out there talking about how everything's coming down. So Greg Van Dyne, my co-host, he and I keep a pretty optimistic look on things and want to keep it fun.
Good. Well, I'm definitely going to tune into that. I'm always looking for good new podcasts to jump into. And I've always had a fascination and a belief that a lot more of us should be helping, particularly with veterans transitioning in career, because that's, as you explained of your story, it's a big shift mm-hmm. with or without COVID. So this has been neat, Kevin. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And I'll also look you up in San Diego sometime soon.
Please do. Yeah, we'll do swamis one day.
That'll be fun. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,